Welcome to episode 66 of Paper Talk, a series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and I run Helen Hebert Studio, a hand papermaking studio in Colorado's Rocky Mountains, where I create artist books and installations. I also host the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat and papermaking masterclasses here in the studio, and I teach online classes about paper, light, and books, too. Find out more at HelenHebertStudio.com. Today, I'm talking with Rosten Meyer, a designer, paper engineer, and publisher who creates pop-up books under the name Popposition Press. Working mostly with contemporary visual artists, Rosten has self-published over 20 pop-up books, cards, and pop-up art prints since he started Popposition Press in 2013. Some of his published titles include The Pop-Up Art Book, The Necronomicon Pop-Up Book, and Dimensional Cannabis, The Pop-Up Book of Marijuana, which is a collaboration with six different paper engineers. Rosten is just one of a handful of people in the world that self-publishes pop-up books, entirely managing each project from design to production to marketing and distribution. I want to mention that we had some recording issues for the first quarter of this episode, but bear with us. I think it is still intelligible and a delightful interview. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Rosten Meyer, welcome to Paper Talk.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And we live in the same state now. You're in Westminster. I'm up in my studio's in Red Cliff, Colorado, which is cool. But I don't think I've seen you in this state. I've only seen you at conferences.
Yeah, obviously, which would have been this year, but next year I'll see it.
That's right. Yeah, we're both members of the Movable Book Society, which is paper engineers and pop-up people. And it was supposed to meet in Denver, but was canceled because of COVID. So, yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about your childhood and how you sort of the trajectory to paper and paper engineering.
Sure. So I was born in Chicago, but I moved to Florida when I was a little one, two or three. So I grew up in South Florida. You know, as far as me getting started with pop-ups, I'd say probably when I was like a young teenager, 12 or 13, I had some pop-up books. I think my parents had them when we were kids. And I had some interest in them. And then, you know, I had the idea to maybe make a pop-up book like when I was around that age. Mm-hmm. Then fast forward, let's say, to high school, college age, 18 or 20, I think it was the Alice in Wonderland, Robert Sabuda book. Uh-huh. I believe that was the first really complicated book that I saw. And around that same time, I discovered some of these artists that make designer toys, like kind of fine art sculptures for adults. And that's when I had the idea originally to maybe one day make a pop-up book with some of these artists. Uh-huh. And, you know, I think I did a little bit of paper engineering, just kind of playing around with basic shapes for a couple years in my early 20s. And then I never really did anything for another decade or so. But I always had this idea to make like a weird adult pop-up book with some of these artists that I was a fan of. And then when I was 33 years old, that's when I started down this whole journey of learning paper engineering and figuring out self-publishing and working with the artists and everything.
Oh, wow. And so just
that was
back
7
up
years ago.
Okay. So just backing up, did you go to college and what did you study? And what were you doing until you were 30?
I did. I went to the University of Florida. I had a bachelor's degree in English, so I didn't really have too much of a focus, but I did take a couple classes about web design and kind of general design, even though I wasn't an art student. It was still in the English department. And I did and still am also a web designer. So that was my job for most of my adult life, and I still do freelance web design. But no, there was really no art classes going on or anything like that with me all through college. Most of my 20s until my early 30s is when I really started learning paper engineering and really getting into it.
Okay, and how did you do that?
You know, I got a couple of the well-known books, like the Elements of Pop-Up book, the David Carter one of the Keith Finch books, and started experimenting. I didn't really have like a project or anything to work on, so it's like I would, you know, do a couple pop-ups, not touch it for 6 months or a year, something like that. But I always had this interest in figuring it out. Like it was this big unknown puzzle that one day I would try to solve or something like that. And it still feels like a puzzle this many years and projects later. You know.
Yeah. Well, that probably keeps it interesting, right?
Yeah, it's always interesting. I mean, even really simple things are still fun to do.
Right.
I find it all very interesting, and it's you know, everybody that I know in the paper world, all the paper engineers that I know, everybody is kind of always learning new things, and that's a really interesting aspect of this community, that everyone's kind of learning something for themselves and sharing something or looking at something that another designer did and kind of applying that method to their work.
Yeah. And so how did you, so it sounds like your dream from childhood became reality. How did you put that together? And what was your first project? Yeah.
So my first project was a funk book, the first version that I did with Jim Mahfood. And Jim is a pretty well-known, like, independent comic book artist. I had befriended him through doing web design. I actually redesigned his website and brought up the idea of doing a pop-up book a couple times with him. And I think he was like, yeah, I don't know what that means. You know, he's like, okay, buddy. And then a year or two later, I started making the first mock-ups and then, you know, showed them to him. He loved them. And then we decided to make the first book. And that was, I started making the book in between. No idea how to do anything. So I had to learn, obviously, the basics of paper, book printing, all this, a lot of unknown stuff. I was actually using a really cheap plotting machine, kind of like a craft one, but a little more basic. And that machine, actually, that I made that first book with, I think it broke 10 or 11 times. And every time it would break, I would have Amazon send me a replacement. So since then, I have a better machine, of course. But that, you know, that was a huge undertaking. Looking back on it now, I did that with my brother Mark, helped the first project. He helped design some of the pop-ups and he helped me with assembly. It was 100 copies of a 10-page pop-up book, which now I know is kind of insane number of full-size pages. Usually you see about 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8, but rarely 10 or more pop-up. So the design process to figure everything out, the engineering for that book, was about 6 months. And I'd say it took us another 6 months to actually create and we pre-sold them. I think this was around the time Kickstarter had started, but wasn't really popular. So I believe we just sold them online ourselves, meaning Jim Mahfood, the artist, and I, and sold enough to, you know, make somewhat of a profit and for me to do another book.
So I have a question.
So
are you saying that you produce these by hand, or did you have these produced somewhere?
Yeah, so that first one I produced by hand completely.
Wow. And how were they printed?
Printed on actually the same printer that I use today, on a Epson Stylus 4800, and then cut with a plotting machine and then hand assembled.
Okay, yeah. So all done in your office, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, even the, that's the first and only time that I've put together the case wraps, like using book board and book cloth and actually wrapping the covers. Since then, I haven't handmade any books. They've all been produced overseas.
Right. So that one sold well, those 100 copies. And so you decided to continue. Was that the one that you brought to, I remember you came, I think it was Boston where we met. And
that was the same book, yeah.
Yeah. And had you met any of those paper engineers yet? Because that's the gathering of the Movable Book Society. And because you seem to
know
a lot of them.
But I haven't met anybody in person, but I actually, when I decided to make this book, I was like, well, I need to talk to some of these paper engineers that have done this. So I actually reached out to four people. It was David Carter, Matthew Reinhardt, Kyle Ullman, and Sam Ida. And I knew them just from looking up pop-ups online. I had some of their books. All four of those guys replied and were like really open and, you know, welcoming to what I was doing. And I'm still friends to all of them today, which is pretty neat. So yeah, if it wasn't for those guys replying and kind of like giving me some tips and helping out a little bit, it would be, definitely be a lot harder to have figured out how to do that first.
Right. And those guys are all doing design work, paper engineering for other people. You're really unique that you are publishing your own books and producing them yourself.
I think I'm still one of only a handful of people in the world that is self-publishing pop-ups. Mm-hmm. I know that Philippe Huger, the French paper engineer, I don't think he's still making his own books. He was for many years.
Okay.
And then there's, I think it's a couple. It's, I believe it's two people named Isinori, the Japanese publisher, and they're some handmade books. But yeah, there's not many paper engineers that have actually kind of like self-published a book and, you know, seen the whole thing through production. Usually they're kind of just involved in the design part at the beginning.
Right, right. And so after you did that first book, how many have you done now? What number are you on?
One of those was a book that I didn't design, which was this handbag book that David Carter did.
Okay.
So I've published seven books now, and okay. I believe somewhere around 15 like prints or cards, kind of like one-off projects.
Right. And I'm curious to hear about the design and manufacturing process, how that's changed since that first book.
Yeah, you know, so after that first book, I knew that I wanted to do a second one. I had already kind of lined up some artists, and I knew that I wanted it to be a compilation book with six different artists. But I also knew, most importantly, that I did not want to hand make those. You know, right. it was so much work to do that first one.
Yeah.
So it was, I think it was Kyle Ullman that referred me to Jackie Lau, who is the printer that I'm still using for everything. Jackie's based in China. He was working for, I believe it's the company is called Millennium. You know, in the early 2000s, he was kind of overseeing some of these really big run books, like some of the Matthew Reinhardt Sabuna books.
Okay.
And yeah, Jackie's been great, and I, you know, I've been using him for everything, like I said, since then.
So, have you ever been to China? Have you ever seen the production? Or he just handles all of that?
He handles, you know, when I first did the first book or two that were produced overseas, I knew that paper engineers would go over there to kind of oversee production and help out. And I thought that would be a great idea. But to be honest, from what I know, my runs are pretty low. So I'm usually around 1,000 of each book that I'm publishing. I don't think it takes them that long. And I don't think it's that big of a job that it would kind of require me to be there. So hopefully one day I do have a project that, you know, will take me out there. But I just asked him to send pictures of production and videos. And yes, I haven't ever been there. And I, you know, I don't actually know if other engineers that are still making pop-ups to this day, if they are still going overseas. I don't think most of them are. But I know for a certain point of time, there would kind of always be somebody on press for a lot of those bigger books.
Yeah. I guess that's true. My first job in the 1980s was in New York City working for a printing company, and there were always clients coming for press checks. But now with the digital age and the ability to ship things quickly, it's probably not as necessary.
I don't think it really is. I mean, there's still that kind of extended proofing process for a pop-up book, where you see a couple mock-ups from the printer before they actually print. So usually you can kind of catch the problems or catch the issues, but there are still things that happen for my kind of like independently small runs, and even some of the bigger, larger run books, there's always something seems to happen in production where stuff doesn't always work exactly the way you designed it, regardless of how you set up your file.
Right.
So it seems to be one of these unknown things that all the paper engineers that I've talked to are like, yeah, that's something that's happened to me, but that's just the way it is. It's interesting.
Yeah. I'd love for you to take us through the production of a whole book from your initial, like, why you chose the particular artist, and then how you came up with the pop-ups, and then, what kind of, physical design work, or do you do it on the computer? Just sort of all the way through, if we can do that.
Sure. So, as far as like picking out the artists, I've been very lucky that I've been able to work with a lot of my favorite artists, and most of the people that I've asked to work with have said yes,
mm-hmm.
which is great. So, I still have a running list of people I'd like to work with and future projects and things like that. I would say that, let's say about 75%, like a good majority of the pop-ups that I make are usually based off of existing artwork rather than created from scratch.
Okay.
So for example, that, the Necronomicon pop-up book that you have a copy of,
mm-hmm.
that book is the first one that was created from scratch. It wasn't based off of original artwork. But going back to the original art, so sometimes it's easy to look at a piece of art and think, well, how can I bring this into three dimensions, or how could this work? So I'll generally pick out half of the spreads, let's say three pieces of art to make pop-ups with, and kind of think about it and, print up the flat artwork, put it on my wall in my studio, and just kind of like brainstorm and look at it for a month or two or sometimes more, mm-hmm. just to think about, well, I want, this to happen or this to pop up. And it's pretty fun and I think easy to actually make like a mock-up that doesn't actually fold or have any working paper engineering, meaning just cutting out the artwork and kind of shaping it to what I would want the pop-up final product to look like. Once I do that, I'll show the artist and they'll say yes, or maybe let's do something different. And then I actually hand cut everything. So I do use the computer to set up die lines, but I'd say only about half the time I will start with die lines. A lot of times I'll just cut things out and, I, at this point, know enough kind of basic engineering that I can make things fold, do V-folds and layers and platforms without having to jump into the computer to mm-hmm. actually lay that stuff out. And then what I'll usually do is I will make hand-cut mock-ups where I'm printing them out, cutting everything by hand, gluing it together throughout the whole process until it's completely done. And at the point when the page is completely finished, approved by the artist, I'm happy with it.
So the kind of the last step for me for design is to cut the finished piece out on my machine, on my plotter machine, to verify that everything's going to work. And at that point, then I will send the die lines and a finished mock-up to my printer overseas. What I've been doing for the last couple books is I actually, like, let's say I'll have two pages done, I'll just send him those two pages. I won't wait until everything's done.
Uh-huh.
And then he'll kind of like, you know, get the next two and then get the next two. And it's interesting, other than that first book that I handmade, that we made the book covers and all that stuff, I actually don't see the pop-up in book form until I get that first proof from the printer, because I'm not actually gluing the pages together.
Right.
I'll, you know, design each page, and it's kind of to save time. And it's, you know, I don't think that I can actually make as nice of a book cover and
right.
kind of, you know, they use better paper and things like that overseas. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't actually see the book for, you know, until everything's done and the printer sends me that first proof that they do.
That is interesting. But you're confident that everything you've engineered will work properly, just that the page prints
yeah.
function. The matter of putting them together into the book form is a different thing that just will work.
It is. And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, there's like, if you have two pages next to each other that have a lot of bulk, let's say like in the center, it kind of feels a little strange when you see that. Like the last book that I published was, which was actually the kind of like a revised version of the first book I did.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting, is it's like we had the order of the pages set up, but I never glued them all together, so I didn't know how they would work. And
right.
it's actually a little bit thinner in the end than I expected it to be.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'd say like 95% of everything still works, or usually it works better. You know, it seems like there's kind of stronger tension when the pages are bound together.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the weight of the book cover and the other spreads on each side.
Right.
So usually it seems to actually like just generally work better in, you know, when bound in a book as opposed to when they're just loose pages.
Got it. And are you, so you said you're sending the die line, and that just shows the printer how it cuts out. Is that right?
Yeah, so
it's scoring and folding.
It's a usually an Illustrator file or a PDF that's got three layers. It's got art and then score lines and then die lines on top of that.
Okay, all right. And is the only proof you're getting a fully assembled book, or do you get intermittent proofs of the printing?
Sometimes, like, I'm working on a book right now, designing a book with the artist's name is Sandra Shriver. I'm butchering her name because she's actually a French Canadian, and I'm not saying her last name correctly. But so her artwork is interesting. It's basically these hyper-realist portraits of women wearing masks made out of ripped comic strips.
Mm.
It's got a really, really unique look to it, and because, you know, the edges of the pieces are supposed to be ripped paper, we're going to have to laser cut those because they're so detailed that a normal die wouldn't be able to handle that much detail.
Uh-huh.
So like, for example, in that case, I'm actually just last night just sent him the first page so that he can run a laser cut test so we can see how it's actually going to look.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's rare. Usually I don't see the book until I get that first proof. And the other interesting thing, I actually asked some other paper engineers about this recently. I've only seen a white mock-up the first time that I had a book mass produced. And, you know, we kind of skip that step because I feel like you're still going to, you know, the whole point of the white mock-up is to verify that the paper engineering works.
So it's an unprinted folding dummy.
Unprinted dummy of everything in white. So I did that the first time. Not everybody that I talk to still gets those white mock-ups. Some people do go straight to color, and that's what I'm doing. So I'll send all the pages over. They actually digitally print, and I believe they're hand-cutting the first mock-up that they send me. And that kind of acts as, you know, verification of the paper engineering and the assembly on their end and the printing. And then once we approve that, make whatever changes are needed, then they'll print the sheets, create the dies, die cut everything out, and then send me one proof with the actual die cut pieces. And you know, usually it's a little bit better because it's not hand cut. They're hand cutting that first mock-up.
Right.
So yeah, I'd say two rounds of mock-up samples I'll get. And then once production starts, they'll always send me a couple copies of the finished assembled thing just to kind of verify a second time how everything is gonna look and work.
Right. And since you've done several books, do you have a formula now? Like you were saying, that first book you did had 10 spreads. Is there a formula for like how many spreads?
Yeah, kind of. So after that first one, I looked at everybody else's books, and you know, I think most books are 5 or 6 spreads. So that's usually what I stick to is 5 or 6. I think there's some of the alphabet books, and there's some kind of like smaller format children's books that, you know, those are 26 spreads or something like that, or around 20. But yeah, I usually 5 or 6 spreads, and I usually price most of my books at $50 or $60 for the regular edition based off of those number of spreads, assuming they're about $10, you know, worth $10 each or so.
That's amazing that they can be produced for that amount. Yeah. And what about original paper engineering? Do you feel like everybody is like that you're doing original paper engineering? I mean, I know everybody kind of sees and copies, but do you feel like you're making it your own, or is it just kind of V-folds and, you know?
I mean, a little bit of both. I have done some things that are weird bits of engineering that don't, you know, make sense. I've definitely done things that I've shown other more experienced paper engineers, and they're like, what is this? How does this work? And that's kind of cool because it's like, you know, but I have also, you know, copied things from other people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people have done that. Yeah, that's a really interesting question because it comes up a lot. Like, it seems like everybody that's doing this in the world, you know, they've seen all the Meggendorfer stuff. They've seen all the kind of like historical pop-ups. But even so, I'm working with Matthew Reinhardt now. We're engineering a book together with this artist named Shag, and Shag is, his name is Josh Hagel. So that's where he gets his art name from.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, one would think that looking at like Matthew's really, really complex engineering, that he's got set formulas for everything and he knows exactly like what to do. There's still a lot of experimentation with the way he works, which is really kind of cool to see. So yeah, I just spoke with him yesterday about, there's a spread that we're doing for this new book that's a beach scene, and these kind of like, there's some waves and there's a VW bus, and some of the things that I did were things that he wouldn't have thought about. And you know, he, for him to say like, oh, this is really cool engineering, it's kind of neat. But yeah, I think everybody that's doing this like does a little bit of both. There's a lot of reference material out there to think, well, if you know, a pop-up could be made like this, then I could do something like this. But there's also no rules, you know. It's like, as long as it works, it folds flat and it pops back open, it kind of feels like you can do anything. And it also seems to me in the last, like, I would say year or two, you know, I know you had Jean-Paul on your podcast.
Mm-hmm. From Best Pop-Up Books, yeah.
Best Pop-Up Books. And he does a lot of really cool, just like these abstract bits of engineering. And it's like if you look at his work in the last year, there's a handful of things, 5 or 10 things he's done, that's like, no one's really done that before. And so it's kind of, I think that's exciting because everyone that's doing it is like, well, there's still all of these unknown things that can be done with paper engineering and pop-ups. And I think that's kind of exciting.
Hey listeners, let's take a little break here and I want to tell you about the paper year, which is going online in 2021. This is an annual subscription club, kind of like a year-long online class, featuring a new paper project each and every month. Get inspired with video and written project instructions designed to spark ideas that keep you creating for the rest of the month. Explore creative paper techniques, including origami, pop-ups, paper weaving, book arts, paper cutting, and more. And join our growing community of paper lovers online to learn and share in a warm, encouraging, supportive, creative environment. Visit HelenHebertStudio.com to find out more and hold your spot. Registration opens in late December, and the first project will be delivered on January 4th.
I'm curious a little bit about the financial side and how you produce. Like you said, you're working with Matthew Reinhardt and an artist now. Do you pay the artist? Just kind of the general sort of.
Yeah. So generally the artist is always getting a cut. And then if I am working with another engineer, either they'll get percentage, a royalty, or okay. In some cases I'll pay other engineers up front. It kind of changes from project to project.
Right.
Financially. So, I feel like I started doing this at a really good time with, like I mentioned earlier, with Kickstarter and mm-hmm. crowdfunding. The majority of the books that I've done and, the cards and prints that I make, the majority of the stuff that I'm doing is crowdfunded, meaning that pre-orders for whatever the project is are paying for production.
Right.
I've done two projects directly on Kickstarter, and I've kind of self-crowdfunded, meaning just taking pre-orders through my website for most of the other projects. There's been a couple projects that, that pre-orders didn't pay for production, but that's kind of the model that I'm using. And, the reason that I do that, so a lot of the artists that I work with, I originally found out from the designer toy world, people that make these limited edition sculptures, and the pre-order model has been a big part of that world for a long time, yeah. Even before Kickstarter came around. So that's kind of like what I'm doing with my books. Again, like I said, not everything, works out as far as getting to the right people. It's interesting. It's really kind of complicated to target the right people. Like, I'm working with all these different artists, so it's easy, relatively easy to get audience, but it's like finding other people outside of their direct fans is a complicated thing. I mean, it's kind of like a whole nother discussion about online marketing, but it's almost like there's no set formula. You can't say, well, this worked for the last project, I'm going to do the same thing for the next one, because it just doesn't happen that way. I look at getting press as the same kind of thing. It's like sometimes you'll get press for these projects just out of the blue. And then if you really try really hard and go along all the right avenues, it doesn't really work out. So that's kind of like the biggest unknown for me right now is actually mm-hmm. I am marketing them well, but getting to the right people and what's the best avenue. Right now I'm convinced that Facebook ads work the best, mm-hmm. over Instagram, and interestingly, specifically desktop ads seem to work better on Facebook than mobile ads, I've learned.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I could see how that's a challenge because every artist is different. They bring new people to you, and I'm sure you have a following, Popposition Press. We never said the name mm-hmm. of your company. People that
Opposition Press,
buy whatever you produce. Do you attend any shows to sell your work at, or is it all online?
Ironically, this is the first year that I really was like kind of ramping up to do more shows. They're all canceled, of course. So there's a show called DesignerCon that is in California around Thanksgiving every year. And that's kind of like the best event for the kind of like scene. A lot of the toy companies are there, other companies that produce things like myself or there, some clothing companies, but it's like the vast majority of the artists that like I work with and people that are in that world are at that specific convention. So I've been doing DesignerCon for 4 or 5 years. There's one here in Denver that's called Dink. It's a, I'm actually wearing the shirt right now.
Oh yeah.
It's a, one of a handful of kind of small press independent comic book conventions. So that's been fun. And yeah, I was looking forward to the, you know, the Movable Book Society conference, which is rescheduled 21. And that's, you know, it's the one time like I can see all of the other paper engineers in person. But other than those type of events, it's pretty much all online. It's all done online and it's been pretty successful. It's just like, you know, I'm storing everything here in my garage. You've seen it here, distributing it. I'd say like 80-90% of my sales are online, almost everything.
Right. So you're the packer and shipper. Do the books come like prepackaged, ready to go, or they're in boxes?
They do, but I still look through every book before I send it out. I don't want to send somebody a book that's got a rip or,
right,
you know, and that still happens with your book. It's like there's always going to be a couple bad apples in the batch or so. Right. Yeah, but I'm shipping everything out myself. It's not a ton of work except for when I have to fulfill a crowdfunding campaign. Like, so I did a Kickstarter for this second version of the Pop-Up Funk book earlier this year. We had 400 some odd orders. We sold like another 200. So I got 600 books out, packages out within 2 weeks, I think it took me.
Wow.
But I kind of like it. It's a bit cathartic to just sit there and, you know, pack things up, and yeah, I don't mind. I mean, I guess at some point I'll stop doing that, but I don't mind doing it now.
Right. And you said, how many did you say you produce? 1,000 or 1,500 normally?
Usually a thousand. Every run of produced books been 1,000. The only one that's been more than that is, it's actually the Necronomicon pop-up. That one did so well on the initial pre-order that we printed 3,000 copies of that one.
Okay. So that kind of helps you know how many to order then. Were you able to print all 3,000 the first time, or did you reorder?
Yeah, just the first time. And we're almost sold out of all of those now.
Yeah, right. And do you have projects going on at all different phases? Like you're contacting artists, you're working on design, you're selling, obviously. Like how many projects do you have going on at one time, would you say?
For the first couple of years I was doing this, I was just doing one book at a time. A couple of years ago, I started doing cards and prints.
Right.
And the idea behind the print, like, well, rather than it taking 3 or 6 months to design a whole book and, you know, do a crowdfunding campaign, generally a card's pretty simple. Some of the prints are a little more complicated, but the whole thing can be done in like a couple weeks. And that's a really nice feeling when there's such a big kind of like block of time that you need to put in to finish a whole book. Right. So for the last year or two, I have had multiple projects going on. Right now I have 2 books I'm working on. I just finished a couple new greeting cards, and then I have like 3 or 4 greeting card print projects where it's just one pop-up I'm doing with an artist. My goal is to get something out every quarter, and I'm not there just yet. I think maybe next year that will happen. You know, ideally, like, I mean, it'd be great if I could do 2 books a year, maybe 4 print or card releases. I will be making more cards. I think I'm going to do some like kind of birthday cards and things like that soon. I just find it fun. I feel like it's a challenge to create something that's still fun, that's not a lot of pieces. I give myself a limit of, I try to make it no more than 10 pieces of paper per card. which is still a lot, I think, for a card. But yeah, they're just fun to do, and I just love that 9 times out of 10 they're finished in like I said, a week or two, and it's like that's it, they're done. So it's kind of nice. Right. And then I do a couple commercial projects. I don't really say yes or to any book projects because I'm doing my own books.
Right.
That's my main focus and priority, but I'll do smaller engineering projects. Like there's this company called IM 8-Bit, and they actually are a record publisher. They do video game soundtracks on vinyl.
Uh-huh.
So I've done a couple projects with them. I'm working on something now that's like kind of more packaging design stuff, that sometimes it's pop-up, sometimes it's more packaging design, sometimes a little bit of both. But those are fun. And again, like the cards, it's not a huge time commitment. So I'm okay with doing that. But yeah, from this point moving forward, I'm basically book-wise just going to do my own thing.
Right. And are you still doing the web design too?
I am. Yes.
Wow. So
and it's been easy to manage, except for actually, interestingly, this year, and it wasn't until maybe summertime, on the web design side, my web design business got really busy. And I think it's just, you know, people are spending more time in front of their computers. A lot of my web design clients, you know, they're focusing more on their sites because that's their only source of income for a lot of these types of companies. So I've actually it's been really busy, which is a good thing, but it's kind of unexpected because I haven't been this busy with web stuff for years. But yeah, I'm juggling a lot. And then I've got two little ones also. So there's a lot going on here.
Yeah. You've got two really cute, adorable kids that you post about on Instagram. I love it.
Thank you.
So let's talk about that transition from Florida to Colorado and why that happened. And are your clients, your web clients, all over the place? Or are they from, you know, Colorado or Florida or people you know, sort of?
All over the place. I still have a handful from Florida. Uh-huh. And then I kind of always have had some out in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a colleague that I work with who works in kind of like the green energy, clean tech world. And I've over the years had a lot of clients. I've retained a lot of those clients, not too many from Colorado, interestingly, but yeah, I've been doing the freelance web design for almost 15 years. So a lot of those clients have stuck with me over that time and, you know, they'll still refer me. So I was in Florida, and when we met, when that was in 2014, mm-hmm. at the first movable book conference I went to, my wife Kim is a research professor, and she actually got a job out here at CU Anschutz, and that's why we moved out here.
Okay.
Yeah. I really had no reason not to leave Florida, you know, not to come here, or any good reason to stay in Florida. And I'm honestly really glad that I did. I don't love the winter here. I don't love the snow and the ice because I'm from Florida. Right. That said, I love it here. I mean, it's great. I don't really think we're going to go back anytime soon.
Right. Cool. And, So I wanted to ask about you have special editions. You have a different name for them, but how do you, what are they called, and what makes them deluxe? I think that's the word.
So that's something that is actually with the first handmade one we made, you know, out of the 100 copies, it was like 90 regular ones. And then 10 back then we called them AP, artist proof.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was essentially, it was the same book. It had a different color book cloth, and I think it came with a print. And that was just a test to see, you know, again, because I'm from this like designer toy collector world where everything is limited. And
right.
With the toys, they'll usually make, let's say it's a blue elephant. They'll make 1,000 copies of the blue elephant, 1,000 red elephants, and then there's like 50 or 100 black elephants. And everybody wants the black elephant. Right. So I tried to apply that thinking into the way I'm editioning my books. Also financially, it's, you know, they're a good moneymaker because people want those more than the regular copies, and they're obviously priced higher,
right,
harder to get. So yeah, that's actually kind of evolved quite a bit. So the first one was, there was 10 APs. For the second book that I did, the pop-up art book, I made so that was a 6-spread book with 6 different artists. I offered 10 special editions from each artist. And then I actually made like an extra pop-up for that, handmade those, for some reason, handmade all of those books, and then sold 10 copies of each of those. That was still a lot of work, and that was still kind of like, it felt like going back to making everything. And then for the third book I did, which was, that was Junko Mizuno's Triad, for that one, the special edition actually had a unique pop-up spread that was you would only get in the special edition. So it had a different cover. That's also, was that the first time I did the cases? No, it was actually the second book. I also make these different slip cases. I had the idea, I don't know where I got the idea to make these acrylic slip cases, because I just thought it would look cool. Yeah. And I found the manufacturer on Alibaba, actually, to make those. And I've been doing those for almost every book since. So it's like the special edition usually has a different cover art or some sort of foil embossment or foil stamping on it will come with the slip case. And usually it's signed by the artist, and the way that we kind of manage that, I'm not shipping 100 copies of each of these books to the artist to sign. We'll make a book plate, signature sticker, and they'll sign those, and then I'll affix them to each of the copies as they sell, and I ship them out. But yeah, that's been, I really like coming up with it. It's kind of fun. It's like you finish this project and thinking about what the special edition is going to be has actually been a fun part, and still is. And so it was the Necronomicon. I actually just wanted to see if people like would be interested in a higher end kind of special edition. So we made 10 copies of a really, really intricate wooden engraved case for that. And that worked out well. I think I'm going to do that again with one of my upcoming books. But, you know, then there are people who collect pop-up books or maybe don't know the artists that I'm working with who are just fans of what I'm doing. And I've noticed there's a handful of people around the world that do collect the special editions that I make. And,
yeah,
you know, if you look at the financially, if you look at the total amount of money that a project can make, it's like those numbers really jump up when you have, you know, $300 special editions and things like that. So yeah, that seems to have been a good move, and I don't think I'm going to stop doing that anytime soon with these new books. I know most of the trade kind of pop-up books that are still made, I don't think they do any special editions. I know some of them used to, but I haven't seen many people do that since then.
Yeah, that's so interesting how you've taken what you've seen in the toy industry and applied it. I make artist books, which are much more expensive, and I produce far fewer because they're all made by hand. Sure. But, and I don't do a special edition, but I do have a friend, and I know other artists who make artist books who they do sometimes have 5 copies that are hand painted or something, some right. Special unique
embellishments,
the embellishment that it raises the price and makes it a limited special thing. Yeah, well, cool. I wanted to see if you had any recommendations. I want to just hear like what your favorite paper is to work with when you're making mock-ups and why.
Sure. So I've asked a lot of these kind of more experienced guys what they use, and everybody uses something a bit different. Some people use 10-point paper. Some people use 12. For a while, I was using, I never got a clear answer on this, I was using Carolina cardstock, and my understanding is that Carolina is just the manufacturer, and it's not the type of paper.
Okay.
Even though some stores sell it as Carolina 10 point or Carolina 12 point. I have been ordering my paper from Paperworks for a couple years now, and I just use their generic cardstock, which I believe is the same. I use 12 by 18 sheets for almost everything that I do. And then in some cases, I will need to bump it up just a little bit to 13 by 19, which is the biggest single sheet that my printer can take, which is why I use that size. So some of these vinyl record projects that I've used, it's a 12 by 12 sheet, so the flat spread open is 12 by 24.
Right.
It just gets a bit complicated. Like, I can design it and I know how to make it, but printing mock-ups gets really tricky because you have to print a couple sections and it gets a little confusing, but I've done pretty well with the printer that I have here. So I've just used kind of like standard cardstock paper. I haven't really even thought about using anything else for any reason. I use 12 points. I like the thicker paper because that seems to match what the printers overseas use. They usually use a bit thicker, and everything always works better when it's thicker paper, in my opinion.
And are you, do you use glue or tape? How are you kind of constructing? Staples, what are you?
I've been told recently to stop using Scotch tape, but I still use Scotch tape quite a bit. I need to start using kind of double-sided tape because Scotch tape, you know, doesn't affix a tab correctly, and sometimes you have to use more tape than is necessary. But since I'm hand cutting one of the reasons I feel like that I'm hand cutting all the mock-ups until I feel like a spread is finished is because I know that all the stuff that I'm doing is going to go into production at some point. So I want to make sure it's all going to work. So I'll use tape like in the early design process, but once things are mostly figured out and I, you know, starting to put the eye lines on the computer for the spread, I will glue everything. And that's again to like verify that it's going to work in production, because you can't really like just the way tape makes, you know, some of these joints work and things move, it's not the same as glue.
Right.
And I feel like that saves me time. I don't, it might actually take me more steps in the end, but I feel like it's better to know if something's going to work with glued paper on paper rather than taping things.
Right. And this makes me think of your mock-ups. Are you saving an archive? Because this might be, or do you keep all these?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I just went through a couple boxes and I don't know what's ever going to happen to them, but I do have an archive of like most of the mock-ups, everything that I've done, which is, it's kind of cool going back and looking to see like how a spread evolved from like the first idea. And
yeah,
I think I've been lucky. It seems like most of the time I'm able to figure it out based off of the initial concept, but sometimes change pretty drastically from start to finish.
Some library will love having that one day.
Yeah, I hope so.
Study your designs. Did you have any other recommendations?
You had emailed about podcasts. So there's a toy podcast that I listen to. It's called Marsham Toy Hour, and they just talk about what's going on with the designer toy scene, and that's pretty interesting. I think there's a podcast that I haven't really followed up on too much this year called Adventures in Design. And that's just been some really good interviews with all sorts of different artists and producers, sometimes musicians on there. Let's see, other recommendations. I would recommend anyone that's interested in pop-ups or paper engineering that is not a part of this group, the Paper Engineers Unite group on Facebook that I think Keith Allen started. That one, it's pretty active, and there's... And, you know, this year specifically, there's been a lot of new people in there. There's a guy, and I don't know how, it's amazing. I think his name is Ritka or something. I believe he's Indian. There's a guy that is somehow doesn't have any pop-up books, and somehow he's recreating these really complex Matthew Reinhardt spreads just by looking at videos online. And I don't even understand how that's possible. But if you see the stuff he's doing, it's not just the pop-up, it's like all the movements and the pull tabs. And so yeah, that's a really good group. I think same with Instagram. I feel like there's been a lot more paper engineers and just people posting pop-up things on Instagram in the last year or so.
Right. And we should mention, this podcast will come out after this is over, but there's a, I think Keith Allen also organizes this Pop-Uptober.
Yes.
So the month of October, there's a challenge to create a pop-up every day. And he's got like a different word to spark.
And I haven't done it. I didn't do it last year and I would like to, but it's, you know,
it's intense.
I'm working on like two books and a couple other things. I feel like I don't have time. I'm going to try to get one or two things in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember last year seeing some really cool things that people came up with.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. Well, wonderful. One last thing about the artists that you choose. Like, do you just, I'm sure you just follow artists and have a list going and you probably meet some at these conventions and one thing sort of leads to another. Is that kind of how that works?
I think that the first, like, you know, the first book was with Jim Mahfood and I kind of already was friends with him.
Right.
Then, and I think it's kind of like a piggyback effect. Like when I asked people to do the second one, I only had Jim's first book reference, and it seems now I'm enough with people that seems like everybody know something that I've done at this point, which is pretty neat. Right. So I've actually reached out to some really, really big artists that are, I'm kind of shocked that they said they're even considering it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. You know, these two books that I'm working on now, it's kind of like a little bit more, I'd say like fine art than what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the artists I'm working with are fine artists shown in galleries, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, my goal is to keep doing what I'm doing, obviously, but to get something, and it's not even about a number or money, but just print 5 or 10,000 copies of something. Mm-hmm. I think just kind of get more copies of a project out there.
Right, right.
That's kind of like my goal, that and getting more releases out per year. Oh, I did want to mention actually that this is kind of exciting news that not many people know about, and I was given the okay to talk about it. So the Elements of Pop-Up, which is pretty well, highly regarded as like one of the best how-to paper engineering books that David Carter and Jim Diaz did. I think it's 23 years ago. So they did a follow-up called The Complexities of Pop-Up that Popposition Press, that I'm going to co-publish with David's company, Blossom Books, which is pretty exciting. And I've got a mock-up of it, and it's really cool because there's a lot of people who have that book and still reference that first Element Pop-Up book. Yeah. So there's another one coming, and I think possibly by the time this airs, we'll have announced it, and it might even be in production by then. But that's kind of this other project that's been waiting in the wings, and we finally are figuring out the details. So it's going to happen, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I've seen David posting over the past year, little spreads and little things. So is it a completely different book or is it somehow related?
Yeah. So it's basically a sequel to the first one. It's the same size, the same, you know, like physical, you know, you've seen some of the mock-ups of like little pop-ups inside. Some of them are bigger. I think in the first book, everything was a small square, I believe, as far as the pop-ups go. There's a big spread in the first spread. There's a little bit of history about printing pop-ups and die making and things like that.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of just like a sequel follow-up to the first one, which is cool.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see it. Okay. And where can listeners find you online?
So you can find me on my website, which is poppositionpress.com. Also Poposition Press on Instagram and just Poposition on Facebook and Twitter. But if you just type in Pop Position Press into Google, it should come up and you'll see what I'm doing. And I'd say I try to post something every day. Usually it's on Instagram and then I'll kind of repost on Facebook. But, you know, just sharing something almost on a daily basis on my Instagram feed is probably the best place to see what's going on with what I'm doing.
Right. And on your website, people can shop for your books and cards and prints.
Yep, it's all there.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Rostin. It was fun.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Helen.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.